How do we build our dreams when we don't know what we want? Learn how Flaunt solves this problem in 5 bold and glittery steps with radio host Laura Cheadle. Using a combination of best girlfriend discussions and therapy-based exercises, listeners are taught how to build their dreams and live their sparkle. Flaunt. Find your fetish. Laugh out loud. Accept unconditionally. Navigate the negative and trust in your truth.
Hello, welcome to Flaunt, Build Your Dreams and Live Your Sparkle. I'm Laura Cheadle, and we are going to do part 2 of my discussion on body shaming, in particular fat shaming, because that is such an enormous problem in our world, in our society. And last week, if you listened to the show, you will remember that I raised a lot of questions. And I did that because there are so many questions around this topic. Some of the questions that I raised, not to rehash the whole show, but some of the questions that I raised were things like, when is it an insult? When is something factual? When is something a comment? And when is something an insult? And that's hard because sometimes things like that are in, you know, how they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes there's something that we can comment on and we are intending it as a compliment or a neutral statement, but it really is painful. It's really a backhanded compliment, things like that. And it just makes it hard. But anyway, like I said, I raised a lot of questions, and today I don't want to go into as many of those questions. I kind of want to go a different direction, not necessarily into answers, but I want to talk about the whole concept of what we resist persists, and also the concept of being a vibrational match for that which we attract in our lives. And I'm sure you're sitting there going, great, I totally love all that, but how does that work with body shaming? And how does that work with fat shaming? Well, let me tell you, we are at a point in our culture where body shaming is kind of at an all-time high. Over the last week, I've done quite a bit of research online, and part of that research encompassed the different idealized female body shapes throughout time. And last week, I commented about body shaming and fat shaming being a predominantly female issue, and sure enough, it is. Throughout time, women have been given this standard to match up to. But for the most part, men have completely escaped that. The only thing is men have been pressured to be tall. But we do not have as much short man shaming as we do body shaming for women. And yes, people do talk about, you know, the Napoleon complex and short men and, you know, lifts in their shoes, that there is that rhetoric around that, but it doesn't seem to be as pervasive as the rhetoric around women and their body shape, their body size, their physical features. There's a great BuzzFeed video out there, actually, that shows the idealized female body structure through time. And it starts with ancient Egypt, and it goes through, you know, the Italian Renaissance and the 20s and the 60s. And it's really interesting how, like in the golden age of Hollywood, it was the hourglass figure. It was the full hips launched right into the 60s, which is that very thin, androgynous body type. So, yeah, women's ideal body type has been all over the map. Truly, what your body looks like and whether or not you fit in really truly determines is determined by the period of time in which you live. And it's kind of crazy when you look over, you know, look at one of these videos and look at the whole history of what we have idealized as women's beauty. And yeah, men have escaped that. So anyway, fast forward to right now. There's a lot of fat shaming going on right now. But in literally the history of the world, humans are fatter now, and I'm saying objectively, like fatter, we weigh more now than we have ever weighed in any other period of time. And I think that's really interesting because we're at our heaviest. At the same time, we are at the worst place in fat shaming and body shaming. And I think there is something going on with that. I don't think that's a total coincidence. In a couple of other periods of time where thin was really in was the 20s and the 60s, you know, and then kind of the 90s also. But going back to the 20s and the 60s, society did not have a collective weight problem. And although women were told they needed to match that body size, that body standard, in order to be attractive, people were not shamed to the degree they are today. But today, especially the United States, has got more of a weight problem. So that got me thinking about all the why behind that. And I have always been a huge believer of the concept of what we resist persists. And there's so much emphasis on healthy eating right now and the difficulty in eating healthily in our society right now. And that's a whole other show. The toxic food, the glut of high fructose corn syrup and things like that that people are shoving into foods, the depleted nutrients, that's a whole other issue. But right now, our whole world is focused on not getting fat. And yes, there's the health implications of not getting fat, but there absolutely are the beauty implications of not getting fat as well. And it just really makes me wonder if some of this body shaming is coming from those of us who do have too much fat and are concerned that we have too much fat. And every time I say too much fat, I'm doing like air quotes with my finger, just so you know, it's not like an objective standard. It's our own internal standard of, oh my gosh, my thighs have cottage cheese on them, or oh my gosh, my belly is floppy, or look at my love handles. It's that too much fat. So when we are concerned that we have too much fat, then we get that pang of fear. Oh my gosh, I'm just like the rest of the world and I'm fat and unhealthy. And we have that huge fear come up. And not only are we fat and unhealthy, but we're also concerned that we don't look good. And more than any other time in history, we have images of other females thrown in our face. Not only do we have movies, but we have TV. Not only do we have TV, but we've got the internet. We've got our phones. All day long, we are inundated with pictures of thin women. We are inundated with pictures of heavier women who are getting shamed. It reinforces in us that we are wrong and it's dangerous and that we're going down this totally self-destructive path, when in fact, we may not be going down a destructive path at all, but it's hard to stay centered in ourselves when it's all around us at such an intent level. And then, because we're fearful of getting fat or of being fat, we have a greater tendency to judge others because we're so afraid we want to deflect and push the attention off of us and move it on to people who are, again, air quotes, worse than us. We want to push the attention and focus on people who are fatter than us. So all of a sudden, we don't look quite as bad. And it's all born from that whole concept of what we resist persists. So we're resisting, we're in a state of fear, and we get judgy. And the more we get judgy, the more fearful we get, and the more we attract, and the worse the whole cycle gets. Because then we're damaging others, and then they become more damaged, and then they damage others, and then those others become more damaged, and it just cycles the whole thing down. I have always been a big advocate of balancing out the carrot and the whip. I really truly believe positive reinforcement is the way to go most of the time. And my version of the whip is not punitive. My version of the whip is consequences, natural consequences for actions. When my kids were little, I did all of the Love and Logic classes. I read all of the Love and Logic books. I listened to all of the Love and Logic tapes. And for those of you who don't know about Love and Logic, it's by Foster Kline and Jim Fay. And they are two, my goodness, I don't know, school psychologists? Not exactly sure of their background, but they're fantastic. And they talk about how when you deal with kids, your kids or kids in a school setting or anything like that, the most effective way to change their behavior is by helping them understand natural consequences. They talk about punishment as alienating and setting you up for a lose-lose situation, because when you punish, it damages the relationship. And they talk about the most important thing in child rearing is maintaining a very positive, healthy relationship. If you have a really good relationship with your kids, then you will be able to present consequences to them, natural consequences of their actions. They will face those consequences, they will learn, and you will still be in relationship with them, and you will still be able to guide them further. Now, an example of that is if you've got a kid and they throw the ball inside the house and they break a lamp. A punitive way of dealing with that is screaming at the child, you know, even worse, calling them stupid or dumb or careless or making them feel like they are a certain thing. You dumb kid, why would you ever do that? Blah, 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 blah. And spanking them or grounding them or putting them in their room. And that's punitive. And what it does is it makes the child angry at the parent, and it takes the internal focus where the child would normally self-reflect on their actions, it takes the focus off of themselves and it moves the focus to the anger with the parent. So suddenly the child is not self-reflecting, oh my gosh, what could I have done better? What caused that accident and why are my parents disappointed? Suddenly all of that learning gets lost and then the child becomes angry at the parent and all of the focus of the energy is on being angry and hating the parent. So you have this opportunity for a lesson that gets completely lost. Now, the Love and Logic way of dealing with a situation like that is for the parent to, hopefully calmly, come in and say something like, "Oh, bummer. You broke the lamp when you threw your ball inside the house. That lamp cost $69. How are you going to replace that?" and to get the child's attention and focus and thoughts back on the child and back on the incident so the child can learn and grow and develop, and so this incident can be a learning opportunity. Well, then hopefully the child can start thinking, oh my gosh, how can I replace that? How can I get money? Can I work it off? Am I going to be without allowance for a certain amount of time? How am I going to get to the store? What do I need to do to make my parents whole again? To deal with the natural consequences of my actions. And then the parent can be this wise and loving guide. How about if you pick up dog poop in the yard for 6 weeks? How about you take on somebody else's chores and I pay you, at the rate of whatever per hour, and you work off this lamp? That way the parent becomes this wise and loving guide, and then the parent can even say, give the child some options, because the kids might not be able to do it. But the parent can say things like, how would this work? And what if we did this? And how are you going to make me whole? And have you thought about this? And perhaps you can ask your grandma to drive you to the store, or would it work if you did X, Y, or Z? And then the relationship between the parent and the child is preserved, because the parent is a loving guide. The parent is guiding and correcting and helping the child understand problem, solution. And then the child is also understanding, wow, next time I might have to think more carefully about playing ball inside the house, because that was a lot of work to earn all of that money and to get myself to the store and to buy a new lamp. I think I might be more careful next time, because I don't want that to happen. And then the child is not shamed. You stupid kid, what were you thinking? How dare you throw that ball in the house? I can't believe you were so stupid. The child isn't shamed. The child doesn't believe they're stupid. The child knows they made a mistake. And then the child is also empowered, because they have been shown how to fix that mistake and what they can do about it. So hopefully the next time, well, first of all, hopefully there won't be a next time, but the next time another kind of mistake happens, the child is not in a state of fear. The child is not defensive. Because if you've ever seen a child or an animal, when they're around somebody who hits or spanks or punishes severely, when they make a mistake, it's utter panic, because they know what's coming. And once again, they kick into that fight or flight mode. They panic. There's no learning going on when you're in fight or flight mode. They run. They hide. They deflect. I didn't do it. It wasn't me. So-and-so made me do it. You can't prove it. And it becomes that defensive stuff. And then once again, the focus goes on the defensive stuff, and it takes it completely off the incident or the learning. So, think about love and logic principles in terms of us, our society, our health, our happiness, our well-being. There is concern in our society about the so-called obesity epidemic. People are concerned. And I'm not going to go into all of the reasons why people are concerned, other than kind of the big two. There are health components to obesity. Health components lead into insurance components, which lead into financial components. That's a whole ball of wax. There's also beauty concerns, in that, of course, we want to be physically attractive. There is nothing wrong with wanting to be physically attractive. There are different standards of beauty. There have been different standards of beauty throughout the history of the world, and there will always be different standards of beauty. But regardless of that, we all want to be attractive in some way. That is not saying we all want to look like the idealized female or the idealized male, but pretty much every human on some level has a desire to be attractive. Now, I want to be very clear. It's a desire to be attractive for themselves. It's not a desire to be a certain way, although some people do have the strong desire to be a certain way, whether it's clean. When I teach my fitness classes, I'm not going to dress up. I'm not going to wear makeup. I'm not going to do my hair, but I have the desire not to repulse people. I have the desire before going into a fitness class to make sure I'm clean and I am attractive and pleasing to those in my class. And then same thing after my class, I've been sweating, I've been working out. I still have the desire to be attractive to people so I'm not offensive. It's not saying I have to look a certain way, but it's like a cleanliness standard. There's this pride standard almost that I care enough about myself to present myself in a clean and healthful manner. And I do things like brush my hair. not because I'm like trying to be a certain way, but because I want to be attractive and presentable as a courtesy to other people. And that's what I mean by we all have the desire to be attractive. Most people are courteous that way. And I guess I'm saying it's more of a courteousness. I don't want people to visibly recoil when they see me simply because I'm interested in maintaining a relationship and having that connection with them. And that's what I mean when I say most people want to be attractive. Most people want to be accepted, and that acceptance means being clean, being appropriate, and at least presenting yourself in a manner that other people can accept. So, with that kind of as our bottom line, most of us want to be attractive in some way. Not sexually attractive. We want to be attractive to humanity in that we can form, because we're pack animals, that we can form tribes or we can form packs. So, the obesity epidemic, there's kind of that fear that we don't fit in. It makes us against them. The people who are obese in this obesity epidemic and the people who are not. So it's pulling people apart. And those people who are not yet part of this obesity epidemic are fearful that that's what they will become. And the people who are being labeled as obese are fearful that they're not attractive to the other people. And then there's fear running on both sides. And just like with this whole love and logic thing, when you're in a place of fear, relationship is lost. So I gain 10 pounds after having a baby. Then I'm too busy raising my kids to work out and I'm not eating well and I gain another 10 pounds. And then because I've gained 20 pounds, my joints hurt and it's becoming more and more difficult to work out. So I don't work out and I start getting into cooking because that provides me joy to make nourishing meals for my family. And the next thing you know, I've gained 30 pounds. And I don't think that I'm obese, air quotes again, but I'm concerned because all I hear about is this obesity epidemic and I don't want to be obese. So then I'm fearful. And I'm fearful that other people will see me as obese. And I'm fearful that all of these horrible things that I hear about are going to happen, and I don't see that helping hand out there that is here to actually guide me along and say, you know what, you are healthy and this is fine for who you are, or you know what, you are getting unhealthy, let me help balance this out for you. Instead, I see punishment and I see threat. So then I start deflecting. He did it. She did it. It's not me. Oh my gosh, I'm not that fat. It's fine. Don't you call me that. Who said that? And it's just like that kid who has been punished too much, or that animal who has been punished too much. The deflection starts happening. The attacking starts happening. I'm fine. Look at her. Look at my neighbor next door. She's gained 40 pounds. Look at that. She's worse than I am. It's not me. It's her. I look great. And then it cycles down. And then same thing, the people who truly have health issues due to obesity, whether it's joint pain or diabetes or whatever, then the people on that side, same thing, they do not see that helping hand either. It's very punitive. Why are you so, quote, fat and lazy? Why don't you love yourself enough to take care of yourself? How did you ever let it get this out of hand? It's shaming. It's just like the kid who breaks the lamp when the parents are saying, you stupid kid, how did you do that? That's what we're doing to people who are truly obese. We're saying, how did you do that? What were you thinking? How could you be this bad? And then that breaks down the relationship, and then it takes the learning away, and it takes the focus off the real problem. There is a real problem for people. People do have health issues because of obesity. People are physically uncomfortable because of their weight. And it takes the focus off, holy cow, how do we fix that? Wow, there's problems with food in our society. There are food deserts. There's a lack of healthy, clean, fresh, available food for a lot of people. Money is an issue. Finding organic food that is affordable can be difficult. There's a lot of things that get lost when the focus only remains on how bad and stupid and uncaring people who are overweight have been. So I hope that kind of makes sense. There is a problem. There is a solution, and there is a way to deal with it that is healthful and helpful and positive for everybody involved. Just like when kids make the mistake and break a lamp because they threw a ball in the house. You can save the relationship, you can keep the focus on the problem, and you can create a working solution, or you can punish and get defensive and hurt the relationship and make things get much worse. And I feel like that is what has happened in our society and why fat shaming right now is so prevalent. I feel like it's prevalent because, one, there is an issue. Two, people on both sides of the issue would like to solve it. But three, everybody starts punishing and then getting defensive, and it's making it worse instead of better. So, as far as a working solution, yeah, that's a hard one. I think I've done good identifying where, in part, it all comes from. As far as the solution, though, that's difficult. We are starting to address, we have been addressing for a while, I think, things like don't body shame, don't comment on somebody's body. We're addressing that. It's better, but it's still not a workable solution, because by not addressing anybody's body ever, we're also ignoring it. That's analogous to ignoring the broken lamp. And yes, I'm aware that analogy has some inherent body shame issues in it, because I'm comparing the broken lamp to an obese person, and that is by default calling them broken, and that is not what I mean to do by that. I just couldn't come up with a way to make that analogy work without doing that. But here's what I will say. When I talk about a truly obese person, that hypothetical individual that I am talking about is somebody who has legitimate and genuine health issues due to their weight. I am not talking about anybody with a so-called excuse, like, oh my gosh, your thyroid's been shot and you've gained some weight and it's problematic, or, you know what I mean, something like that. I'm literally talking about the stereotypical, unhealthy, too much fat on their body person who legitimately wants to change because of their health and weight concerns, if that makes sense. And there is a difference between range of healthful, happy people, and then there's that clinical side. So I hope that makes that a little bit more clear. When people are on that clinically dangerous side, when quality of life is impacted and when that person is legitimately miserable because of their health and their weight is a part of it, they legitimately want to change. In my practice, I've worked with a lot of people in that level, and it's frustrating because it's so easy for them to get caught up in the rhetoric. Do this diet for a week. Eat only, you know, cabbage soup and ice cream. There's a lot of misinformation out there that targets people who legitimately and genuinely want to change and for their best interest need to change. I cannot tell you the numbers of people that I have seen and the crazy things that they have clung onto in desperation to make that change. Whether it's a certain diet or a certain exercise plan, or I mean, it's crazy the amount of misinformation that's out there. And even some of the misinformation, even when it's something that is accurate and real, it's not long-term and it's not sustainable. And oftentimes, there are so many factors that go into it. People are busy. They do live in a food desert. They don't have money for the certain kinds of food. Even when they try to buy certain kinds of foods, there's more issues that come into that. There's family structures that keep people at certain weights. There are people in people's lives that try to keep them looking a certain way or feeling a certain way. It's multi-layered and none of this is simple. But what I'm saying is, if there is a healthy dialogue around, oh my gosh, I have a problem. Here's why I have this problem. Help me do something about it. And if there's a healthy dialogue, then people can respond to that as well. There is no healthy way in our society right now for people who are obese and are experiencing problems because of it and who legitimately want to learn how to make a change. There's no place for them to go to get true, accurate support and guidance. Now let that sink in a little bit, because that is huge. I have had numerous clients get that gastric bypass surgery, and it's been successful, but oh my gosh, even around that, there's a lot of misinformation. I have had people who have done any number of these diets and eating plans that are on the market, and they lose the weight, but then they gain it back. And then there's more shame around that because there's not a healthy dialogue around it. And then there's even misinformation around how much weight to lose and what is truly healthy. And I'm a firm believer that weight is a range, And each person has their own range that is healthy. And we all know when we feel bad. We all know when we're too thin or too heavy. And that is, in part, something for us to decide and something for us to own. And it's also completely normal and natural at different times in our lives to be more or less comfortable with the amount of fat on our body. Women with the whole childbearing cycle, there's times in your life when you will naturally have more or less fat on your body. There are times when people living in different climates might have more or less fat on their body. The amount of fat on a body that's healthy is a range, and it's also dependent on a lot of other circumstances. And when things fall apart in our lives and we get busy and stressed and we gain weight and we get unhealthy, that's okay. And when we get stressed and we're going through a divorce or a horrible time and we get so skinny and we lose weight, that's okay too. But it should be up to us to be able to comment and express and understand our own bodies in a non-shameful way. And that's where I think we will all get the most benefit. We need to be able to discuss bodies and weight and health in a very appropriate and non-judgmental manner. Whether you are too thin or too fat, you should be able to discuss it with people around you and not raise their defenses. Because once their defenses get raised, that's where the conversation breaks down. If there are two people with the exact same body mass index, and one has the desire to lose weight and one does not, that is still okay. And I think we can still have the discussion around why do you want to lose weight and how can that be supported? And why are you satisfied where you're at and how can that be supported? Going back to my love and logic analogy and the broken lamp. If the lamp is broken, it's kind of a fact that needs to be addressed. The lamp is broken. It might not matter. Maybe the parents didn't want that lamp anyway. Maybe it's the best thing that ever happened to them in their life. It doesn't matter. The fact is the lamp is broken. It's not a judgment that that's good or bad or indifferent. It's just addressing the fact that, hey, there's a lamp and the lamp is broken. And that's kind of the piece that gets missed sometimes. We need to be able to talk about the perceived problem. And then once we talk about the perceived problem, then we can identify whether or not, in fact, it is a problem or not. Now, here's what I mean by that. My husband has prediabetes. He is not actually of the mindset that that is a problem for him, and that's for him to judge, and he's got his reasons. If he can talk about that and say, medically, they say I have prediabetes, but I'm not concerned about it, and here are the reasons why, then we can have that conversation. And when he says that to his physician has been understanding of those reasons and in agreement with him. And then they are a team, and then they continue to work together, and things are positive, and he stays healthy. However, they had a health fair at work, and he did the blood fair numbers at that, or the blood numbers at that health fair, and the treating physician there would not listen to him and would not hear his reasons. That physician kept arguing that his numbers were pre-diabetic and that was a problem, and that he needed to lose weight and he needed to change his eating and he needed to decrease his stress, and he was defensive and he was rigid in that these numbers show pre-diabetes and these numbers are wrong, which then set him up as opposing my husband. And my husband's like, I do not need to lose weight. I can eat whatever I want to eat. And it became that defensive fight. And there's no collaborative work that can be done when you're in that state. And that's where hopefully we can start going with this whole body shame thing. Hopefully we can start talking more, not less, but more about our bodies and our comfort level and our health, as well as our aesthetics. Because once it's out there, we don't have to hide anymore. We don't have to get defensive and say, broken lamp? I don't see a broken lamp. I didn't break the lamp, but I don't see anything, and it wasn't me anyway, and you can't prove a thing. Whatever it is, whatever body characteristic it is, if we put it out there more and talk about it objectively without that passion, it will be better for everybody involved. Because what we resist truly does persist. And if I am resistant to talking about my body and my fear of obesity or my fear of not being attractive, then that's all I'm going to do is attract that to me because I'm fearful. Don't notice me. Don't talk about me. Da, 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 da. Whereas if I just put it out there and honestly express, wow, I'm not really happy with my waist right now. It doesn't look that great, and my knees kind of hurt when I move, but it's really hard to find the time to cook healthful meals and to shop and to do this, and I'm pretty comfortable where I'm at right now, so I think I might just hang out right here because I am healthy and I'm happy. It's just that I've got these little concerns. Then I can no longer be attacked because I've already put it out there. I feel like the more we hide, the worse it gets, because then we're covering and we're pretending something that isn't so. Now, one of the things that I do in my work with people is I always use the analogy of burlesque, which is a covering and a revealing of the body. Burlesque, for those of you who don't know, is a parody. It is, in vaudeville terms, striptease. It is not stripping, it is striptease, because it teases with what we cover and what we reveal. And it plays to the standards of the time. For example, when burlesque first started, it started in Europe a long time ago, but when there were the big burlesque circuits in the United States, it was during the Depression, and people didn't have a lot of money for real theater. Again, air quotes. This whole show is about air quotes. People would come to see the burlesque performers, and the vaudeville performers, which was lowbrow theater. So the lowbrow people made fun of high society, and some of the things that they made fun of was the way they were conservative, the way they covered themselves, the way they pretended, the airs they put on. And that's why the removal of clothing became a thing, because it was removing those airs, it was removing those covers, and it was teasing with the fact that people sometimes pretended certain things weren't happening. It was like in the Victorian, the Civil War era, when we would pretend pregnant bellies weren't there, because seeing a pregnant belly implied that sex happened, and that was completely not appropriate in polite society. So women would move the hoops up higher and higher on their skirt and hide their belly because, oh my gosh, it was kind of embarrassing. Even though people kept having children and even though society kept procreating, we couldn't talk about it because that was embarrassing. And that's kind of the similar thing here. Once we start revealing that which we all know to be true, then we can start having a healthy dialogue on it. Once we started revealing the fact that people had babies and that in order to get that baby, they must have had sex, then we can construct a healthier dialogue around it. With burlesque and vaudeville, once we started opening up society to different things, these cultured people weren't really that cultured all the time. They did embarrassing things too. Then it kind of brought both the upper crust and the lower crust together because we could all have this common ground. And that's what I'm talking about with opening ourselves up to discussing bodies and weight more. I will reveal my body to you exactly as it is. Here it is. Here's the two fat parts. Here's the two thin parts. Here's the just right parts. Here are the parts that bring me discomfort. Here are the parts that impact my health. And here are the parts that I'm just fine with. When I present myself to you that way, you can no longer criticize me because I've put it all out there for you. And I have said objectively, here's my problem, here's what I'm happy with, and here's what I'm struggling with. When somebody comes to you in all honesty and says that, the only possible response is, oh, this whole concept, this whole show started 2 weeks ago and then this week's with the concept of not criticizing Trump's body. And the conversation around that was, but wait a minute, when he puts it out there, it makes people point out what is not accurate. When he says, my hands are the biggest hands out there, and you can look at them and say, no, they look small to me. It's not that people care what size his hands are. Oh my God, really? That's not a thing. That has nothing to do with health. That has nothing to do with attractiveness. That is not a thing. It's that when the dialogue is inaccurate to what people notice, then it makes people address it. I had mentioned last week that my nose has been broken and it's crooked. If I am telling you my nose is straight, you will want to comment to me, no, I see it crooked, I see a bump, because it's an obvious inaccuracy. And then when you're saying that, I will feel bad about myself. Oh my gosh, do you think that's ugly? Do you think it's unattractive? How bad is it? What should I do? Is it going to impact my breathing? Then all of those judgments and layers can get layered on. But if I approach you and say, look at this, I broke my nose roller skating when I was little and there's this bump right over here, right here. See how it kind of goes to the side? Then you're going to say, oh, wow, I see that. And then there might be some questions around that. Do you want it fixed? Does it impact your breathing? And then I can answer honestly, but I'm not attacked. I'm not judged. I'm not impacted by that. And if we can get to a healthful place around weight and body like that, we are no longer resisting it, and it can no longer persist. When I can come to you with my body and say, right now, I feel perfect. Right now, I feel healthy and I feel strong and I feel good in my clothes and I love what I'm able to do, then you can say, yay, you. Yay, you. And then if there is a little question around that, because most of our questions come from us, we're all insecure. That's another human nature thing. None of us are perfectly secure in ourselves, and that's okay. We're not supposed to be. If I have just told you I feel comfortable and secure and healthy and happy in all that I am, and you look at me and you see a part of me that reminds you of a part of you that you're not happy with, then you can question me on that. And your question reflects you. It doesn't reflect me. Your question to me about, but doesn't that pooch on your belly get in the way, is not calling down my belly. It's letting me know that you have a pooch on your belly too, and it sometimes gets in your way. And then I can say, you know what? Sometimes it does bug me because it looks poochy in my skirts, and I don't really love that. But it doesn't really impact me when I work out. Doing my forward folds is just fine. I just kind of squish it out of the way. And guess what? Sometimes if I really want to wear it, cover something and look flat, I'll just put it into some Spanx or something like that. And then it flattens it out. But then I'm fine because, no, it's okay. And then I realized that I haven't been judged. I was kind of asked for advice and I shared my experience with you. And perhaps it can shift your thinking around your experience in a helpful, positive way. Then you can say, oh, wow, it doesn't get in my way either. It is an aesthetic thing. And you know what? She's right. I guess I could squish myself into Spanx for a little bit if I want to, or not. And then we all heal and we all grow. The same is true with anybody. When I have worked with clinically obese clients, there are questions that I have had about their experience, both health-wise and aesthetically, you know, pleasing-wise, about their experience. And the questions that I have about their experience is related to me. It doesn't have anything to do with them. It has to do with me. And my questioning of them is really saying, I know this works for me. How does that work for you? And same thing when I have worked with my clients who have eating disorders and anorexia, there are questions that I have about them and their body that reflects me and my experience. And I look to them as a teacher and a guide because I think they can inform me of their experience and then maybe I can use that benefit or the benefit of their experience in my own life. And it doesn't have anything to do with them. And that's really hard because we don't see that. And I don't ask that of them because I don't want to insult them. But then inside, I am curious because we are all looking for guides. We are all looking for teachers. We are all looking for insight about another person's experience so we can relate it to ourselves. Whenever we judge somebody else, it's about our needs that aren't being met. So if I judge somebody, I see something in them that is provoking a fear response in me, and it's fearful because I don't know how to address it. And once again, the solution around that is more dialogue and not less. If, hypothetically, all of us on the planet could expose our bodies exactly as they were and fully explain our own experiences in our body. There would be no more mystery. There would be no more body shame. Because a lot of the body shaming around obesity is, how could you do that to yourself? How could you be so lazy? How could you? How could you? And that judgment really is a question of, what about me? What do I need to do? Is it okay to be like that? Are you happy and healthy? I'm concerned about my own happiness. I'm concerned about my own healthiness. I'm concerned about my own experience. And it will take the emotion out of it. It will take the sting out of it, because then we can all understand. This is my body, and this is my experience, and this is what I look like. And then we can say, oh, I see how you do that. Now I can do that too. Now I understand. And then we can choose for ourselves whether or not we need to make changes, or whether or not we can learn to accept. And then it all becomes okay. So the next time you hear a body shaming comment, or you want to say a comment that shames somebody for their physical appearance, I challenge you to think, what we resist persists. And I want you to think about what it is that you are resisting by saying that comment, or what that person who made that comment is resisting. And I want you to strive to be neutral and detached from that, and to realize that their comment is about them and their experience, and not you and your experience. And more than anything, they may be seeking you out as a guide, or you may be seeking them out as a guide. And see if you can get to the real root of what that comment is about. Is it about their fear and insecurity? Is it about your fear and insecurity? See if you can get to the root of that comment and what it means. And the next step, and this is a hard one, I know, but the next step is challenge yourself to move into a dialogue around that. Challenge yourself to either answer their question and explore what it is they're really getting at, or challenge yourself to phrase your question in a helpful manner so you can get the information that you are truly looking at. And yes, that's a challenge, I know. But this is how I think we can maybe begin to heal the world and neutralize body shame. So just remember, what you resist persists. Move into what your real question is. Think about that love and logic. Think about how you can address what it is you truly want addressed without deflecting and going down a difficult, harmful path that damages relationships, that makes both parties feel worse, and that actually solves nothing. Once again, reach out to me. Let me know what you think. Hopefully, these last 2 weeks have been thought-provoking. Hopefully, you've gotten mad a few times. That would actually be really good. If you've gotten mad or frustrated or thought, oh, then that's good, because that means we're actually hitting on something. We're actually touching on a root cause. So hopefully, you've felt that way at least a few times. And please reach out. Create more of a dialogue. I got some great comments last week. Laura, L-O-R-A, at pyramidfusion.com. Laura Plank Cheadle on Facebook, Life Choreo on Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic, glorious week. Challenge yourself, and don't forget to flaunt.
Tune in next time to Flaunt. Build your dreams, live your sparkle with radio host Laura Cheadle every Wednesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come release outdated labels, roles, and scripts. Reveal the calling of your soul and re-choreograph your own life, even when you're unsure of what you want. In 5 bold and glittering strokes, you too can build your dreams and live your sparkle. Find out more about Laura at pyramidfusion.com.